listening to a program produced in 2010 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic lectures, readings, performances, and discussions that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To learn more about Aloud, please go to our website, www.aloudla.org. Tonight, one writer imagines the life of another. Probably many of you in this room, in addition to loving Angie Min's work, are great fans of Pearl S. Buck. And I know as a girl, I loved reading Pearl S. Buck novels. I think I read some of them sitting in a tree, my favorite tree. Pearl S. Buck was an award-winning American writer who spent the majority of her life in China, and her novel, The Good Earth, was the best-selling fiction book in the U.S. in 1931 and 1932, and won the Pulitzer Prize in 32. In 1938, she became the first American woman to be awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature for her, quote, rich and truly epic descriptions of peasant life in China and for her biographical masterpieces. And with no small irony, she's been described in China as a Chinese writer. Anqi Min was born in Shanghai in 1957, and during the Cultural Revolution, she was ordered by communist officials to denounce Pearl Buck as an American imperialist. At 17, she was sent to a labor collective where a talent scout for Madame Mao's Shanghai film studio recruited her to work as a movie actress. She moved to the United States in 1984. Her first book, the memoir Red Azalea, became an international bestseller and was published in 20 countries. She has also published five other novels, Empress Orchid and The Last Empress, set during the last years of Imperial China, Catherine, Becoming Madame Mao, and Wild Ginger, set during the Cultural Revolution. This is Anqi Min's third time here at Aloud. We're always delighted to have her back. I know you'll appreciate the evening, and we'll start tonight with the film. So take it away, Russell, and enjoy the evening. Thank you.
I hope you like the home video I made, because I feel that I insist on to play it, because you read the book and you know the setting and you imagine it. You know, they right now they just restore everything. The town people really put every effort in it, and the governor of Jiangsu provinces. In Beijing, they have a Great Wall. Xi'an, they have the underground, the two terracotta warriors. And in Jiangsu, we have Pearl S. Buck. And it was just wonderful to know that. But I actually had a hard time to getting to do this video, because they didn't trust anybody like writers from the Chinese face. Because they say, you know, in the past times, all these people come and do harm to Pearl S. Buck. And the town consider, you know, their own daughter. And until I said, I'm from America. They say, are you Minzer's guest? Minzer is the CEO of Pearl Buck Foundation. So they trust Minzer, and then they trust me. Anyway. This book, when I write it, I have this in mind. I wanted to show that this book is going to be a celebration of Pearl Buck's life. And secondly, I wanted this book to be showing the role Pearl Buck played in history of China. And that's the area never been done before. And I love that challenge. And the third, The book is about the role that friendship played in surviving unspeakable hardships. As you already saw in the video, I told you that I combined the characters, several Probuck's actual friends, into this one, so I can make it lasting, cover the entire history of modern China. That was quite a challenge, but I am so glad I did it. It worked out well. Before I go on, I'm going to read you the first paragraph. This paragraph is the paragraph that turned my daughter off. She says, "I would never, ever want to be an author like you because it's so uncool and no fun. You shut yourself up in a cabin with 3 months." And because as a little girl, she comes up, you know, peek, see what mother was doing. And she found 3 months before I was on the first paragraph, and 3 months later on the same paragraph. So she decided to pursue a medical field. She just got accepted by Stanford. So thank you. And she found that was easier than writing this paragraph. So I'm going to share with you with the paragraph. The reason I'm doing that is because, you see, economy is down and the inventions of the gadgets, and you have so many choices. So that's why I appreciate you coming so much, because you have millions of things you can do. I have a good time. You can just stay on your computer, stay on internet, email. So I wanted to be worthy of your time. So again, come to this paragraph. I finished to make my point. My point is that in the past, the publisher would read 3 pages to decide the book's fate, whether they're going to want to sign a contract with you or not. Now, 3 sentences. I think same thing with the media, marketing, same thing with readers. You go to the bookstore and you pick it up. You know, you have so many choices. So, again, I don't know if I succeeded, but this is the best I can do, unfortunately. Before I was Willow, I was Weed. My grandmother Nai Nai insisted that naming me Weed was better. She believed that the gods would have a hard time making my life go lower if I was already at the bottom. Papa disagreed. Men wanted to marry flowers, not weeds. They argued and finally settled for Willow, which was considered gentle enough to weep and tough enough to be made into farming tools. I always wondered what my mother would have thought if she had lived. Thank you. So it's not bad, huh? So, yes, I was ordered to denounce Probuck. I was in a Shanghai middle school in 1971. Nobody knew that Henry Kissinger was working with Prime Minister Zhou Enlai for Nixon's visit. Nobody knew that Probuck was scheduled to be on Nixon's board. Nixon invited her, and Probuck was so excited to come to China. And she was 79 years old, and she was all spirited and getting ready to go. And everybody else got the visa. And she didn't. And I did not know Madame Mao's hands was behind it. And one day I just received the order from the principal, says, denounce this American author who wrote about our peasants in a very distorted way, and she hated us, therefore she's China's enemy. And for me, as a teen, we just followed the order. We were so brainwashed. And we believed that America was going to take over China after Vietnam. We were in fear of America. So whatever Madam Mao says, I did. And I remember that moment, I had a hard time to compose the criticism because I never read anything this author wrote, The Good Earth. And naturally, we were not giving anything that we are supposed to criticize, because you imagine what would happen if we had read The Good Earth. So I copied, I had a hard time from the newspaper. I remember I copied Probuck was, I call her imperialist. It was my first time, American imperialist. I didn't even know what that means. And my path did not cross with Probuck until 1996, after I've gone through all these ups and downs, very eventful. I came to America, didn't speak English, almost got caught, not almost, I got caught at custom, and almost got deported. And I managed to learn English, wrote Red Azalea, my biography, and I was in the Chicago bookstore doing a reading. And afterwards, a lady came to me. She says, "Do you know Paulus Buck?" And before I could answer the question, this lady said, "I want to give you a gift." Gave me a book, a paperback. She says, "I want you to know, Probuck taught me to love Chinese people." It hit me. Love Chinese people. I thought she hated Chinese people. So I look at the book after she was gone. That was The Good Earth. And I was excited, so I went back to the hotel, opened it, started reading, and finished on the plane from Chicago to Los Angeles. I just couldn't help embarrassing myself on the airplane, sobbing, breaking down, because I have never read anything, including my favorite Chinese authors, who wrote our peasants the way Probuck did, with such admiration, affection, and humanity. It was at that very moment I made a promise to myself, I have to write Pro of China. So the rest was a lot of time researching and all that. So today I'm going to share with you some of my research. First thing was that I was motivated, and that when I researched from America and China, I found that over the years, in the circumstance that Probuck was denounced so many times by Chinese government and Chinese people like me, she never lost her faith and love for the Chinese people. And so Chinese people, her village people, especially town of Zhenjiang, as you can see the town, did the same thing. They never lost love and faith for Probuck either. And as I went to do the research, I was really touched. They were very, very protective of her. And they, I can't even ask some of the questions. I went to the exhibition, and they have a Probuck's calligraphy. And I look at the calligraphy, I said, I studied calligraphy, Chinese calligraphy, for 10 years myself, and Probuck could not be that perfect. And I say, "Can you make sure it's hers? Because I have doubts it's not hers." They say, "If you don't believe it, get out." So I went to Pennsylvania, to Probuck's house, and I talked to the museum director and the curator, and I said, "Can you send me the documents, any documents on Probuck's writing in Chinese?" And they said, "Because we don't speak Chinese, we don't write Chinese, so we don't know. But we do have a video for our museum." So I just sent me the video, and I saw the video. There was something she was writing, and that calligraphy a little bit curved. It wasn't that perfect. And that's it. That's her real, real writing. And the writing was so wonderful. And my favorite paragraph that Probuck wrote was her speech. And she was giving over the radio, Radio Asia and Radio Voice of America during the Chinese New Year, during the Cultural Revolution, actually. And she said, she says, "I belong to China." Now imagine she speak this in Chinese over the radio to her folk people, to China. "I belong to China, for I have lived there from my childhood to adulthood. Happy for me that for instead of narrow and conventional life of the white man in Asia, I lived with the Chinese people and spoke their tongue before I spoke my own. And their children were my first friends." And I'd like to share with you about this, how Probuck was taught in Chinese. You probably heard her, you read her books, and you heard her voice on the radio, and but you never hear her talk Chinese or reciting Chinese poems. And Probuck was 3 months old when she brought to China, and she grew up, and her family got her a Chinese tutor. So she was schooled in Chinese classics. That's something that I think is very special, because my writing was very much influenced by classic Chinese poetry, especially the Tang Dynasty poems and the Song Dynasty verses. I just love the condensed structure and the emotional intensity in this poetic language. And I want to show you in the Chinese poem form. And you don't have to understand it. You just treat it like the music. And this poem is called Spring. And it's about a blossom all over, taking all over the mountain. And the poet himself said, I am the little flower, smiling and having a good time among everybody else. And it's about spring. And this is the way the Chinese poems are supposed to be recited. And you imagine this young little blue-eyed, blonde-haired girl citing this with a big voice. Feng Yu, Song Chun Gui, Fei Xue, Ying Chun Dao. Yi shi xuan ya bai zhang bing, you you hua zhi qiao. Qiao ye bu zhen chun, zhi ba chun lai bao dai dao shan hua lan man shi. Ta zai cong zhong xiao. Thank you. For me, the hardest part was that the last part, when I say, I'm smiling among them, and xiao means smiling, and it took me a while to manage it, because I used to say, 他在从中笑, and the teacher says, no, you don't say 他在从中笑, you say 他在从中, and then you smile, and then say, xiao. So I thought that Probuck would have the same treatment by Mr. Kong teaching this little child. I thought it was like really fascinating. And also, Probuck loved the local opera, which is the Huangmei opera. Huangmei opera is the peasant opera that versus the imperial opera that you have this actor with a very trained voice, very sophisticated lyrics and tunes, and the voice is kind of unnatural. Like that. You go to China, this is what you hear, but Chinese don't present you the peasant opera, which I found is beautiful. And the lyrics is about love, about going home, and you have this first lyrics is going to be like look, a pair of birds on the tree. What are they doing? So Probuck's love for Chinese opera, and she goes to watch these peasant operas. And since I'm here, I want to show you how it sounds like. the peasant opera sounds like.
树上的鸟儿成双对。The
birds are making pair. And you, again, imagine Probuck. Now, although she has blue eyes, blonde hair, but she looked Chinese. Why? She had her ama, the nanny, knit the make the hair net, the cap, that cover her blonde hair. And Probuck so much wanted to look like a Chinese girl. And she asked Amma, she says, I wanted to grow black hair, what do I do? And Amma says, well, you go and eat lots of black sesames. So Probuck said, ate so much sesame that she went home and she had a sesame, black sesame all over her mouth, and her mother thought she was eating ants. My other research was that I went to the town of Zhenjiang, tried to research the town of people, and they were afraid of me because the memory of Cultural Revolution, the prosecution, was still fresh. But I kept returning. One day, a person tells me that a dying pastor was ready to receive me. And the pastor was told by the doctor that he had a very short time to live. And he felt that he can speak the truth without live with the consequences. I feel terrible to steal the man's last moments, but the man insisted on seeing me. And it was through him I learned the story about the relationship with the family, Probuck, with her father and mother, their relationship with the villagers. The father was there to convert people, and the mother was there unwillingly because she was having a hard time. But the interesting thing was that the mother ended up getting the people to sign up for the church because the father just turned people off. And Probuck, as a child, she knew. She says, Chinese people have their own lots of religions. They don't need you. And the father was not happy with that. But the mother did everything she could to help the local from giving the medicine, giving advice. And then local people feel that they are their hope. And they actually say, what do I do to repay you when you wanted nothing? And that local old man says, help her husband. Just sign up with the church. And over time, as it turned out, the church wasn't really functioning that great until, I would say, during the Cultural Revolution, when everything else collapsed. And the interesting thing was that I never knew that my mother was a hidden Christian. And to this day, I still regret it. I never asked my mother who converted her, who was her teacher. I only remember during the height of the Cultural Revolution, one night, it was midnight, I got up to pee, and I tripped over in the dark. And it was my mother on her knees. And I did not know what she was doing. She was praying. So I said, Mom, what are you doing? She said, I'm fine. Now looking back, I realized because I was turning into a monster. I was following orders, denouncing my teacher, denouncing because I wanted to be a good girl. Because my principal told me that your life is not important. Your love for the poor people all in the world to save the starving children in America is more honorable than your little life. And the first thing that to show that you are capable is to learn to sacrifice. If you denounce the person you love, you qualify. So I remember that moment I was denouncing my teacher, crying because the teacher gave me the book, Little Mermaid. And I loved the book. I was very conflicted, but I received the award. I went home, I gave it to my mother, expected her to hang on the wall. My mother was disappointed. She said to me, she says, Anchi, if you dare to do that again, I will disown you. So in a way, she raised me her value. And it was very dangerous at that time. And I think that in Zhenjiang, the Christian, the members of, it was not about religion. It was about to hang on each other, hang on faith to survive. And still this, the Zhenjiang, the church was very strong. And they have this tradition. And I had a very good material that I can draw from it. And I started with all these starving people and little thieves. When Prabhupada's father was started preaching on the street, and the kids just hang on him, and says, tell us about God, tell us about Madonna, tell us about Mary, tell us about Christ. And the next thing you know, they stole his wallet. And as a child, Prabhupada, she knew these local kids. So she was watching these kids. And one day she followed the willow who just stole her father's wallet. And she said, give back the wallet. And Willow said, I didn't steal it. Prove it. So they start fighting. That's how they made friends. And I thought that was a great start. Great beginning. And the other research was that it was convenient. I don't really have to research. I lived it. Now, the reason I like the Gurdwara so much, because some of the paragraph Prabhupada described, it was my case. For 17 years, when I was growing up, I traveled every year. For 5 months, I would live by the Yangtze River, a town where my grandmother lives. It's called Nantong. Nantong is an hour and a half drive to Zhenjiang, where Prabhupada's hometown was. And during the raining season, this is a Prabhupada described. During the raining season, the water will swell. And our living room, well, you can see the water turned the mud into liquid. And that was my floor. And it was in Prabhupada's books. And also, we have a branch of Yangtze River called the Tongzhouhe in front of my house. And it's the river where I drink and wash my rice, wash my vegetable, wash my dishes, and swim, and I play with both men's children. So I knew all the town of southern China very well. And also I have a grandmother who had bound feet. I remember I in the summer night, and I just hold her feet because our bed is so narrow, we can't sleep shoulder by shoulder. One of us would fall off. So the grandmother sleep this side, and I sleep this side, get sleep with the bound feet. And as I ask about it, how did you get your feet bound? And she says, Anchi, females are grass born to be stepped on. And I look at my grandmother's life, and I didn't want that, have that life. I don't want my feet to be bound. And I was kind of rebellious, and my grandmother became very worried about me. She says, you're going to learn. You are a girl. You're going to learn from me. Look, if you have anything to complain, you think, you're going to learn to hide your broken arm inside your sleeves. It's just something I came by. I guess that's the early feminist seed that she accidentally sowed in me. And I think it has to do with all my books featuring female figures in Chinese history, from Empress Orchid to Madame Mao to Prabhupada. I think it's something that's it's in my conscience. And it has to do with my early childhood. And there's another thing about in the episode in the book about listening to Voice of America. And it's the experience I experienced myself. I remember we were so craving for anything from America, and we know it's a crime. We will be in jail if we try to listen to the enemy station. But one day, this coworker spent 29 yen, which is a monthly salary, bought this advanced radio from Hong Kong. And then we we all young people get together in the room and put the curtain up, and there was have somebody look watch the door. We listen to Voice of America. And it was very hard to find the channel. But we all were very experienced because, you see, we can tell the difference from the voice from Taiwan, from Hong Kong, or from America is very different from voice from a mainland. The anchor's voice from mainland would say, in one phrase, he would say, 共军节节败退，我军乘胜追击. But in Taiwanese, in Taiwan radio, the anchor song would be a lot more bourgeoisie. Would it sound like this?
共军节节败退，我军乘胜追击.
Versus 我军乘胜追击. You know, so when we hear that voice, okay, that's the right channel. So we got a lot of information from there. It was kind of interesting. So it's my own experience. And of course, I lived through the Cultural Revolution, enabled me to portray Willow and her husband, what they've gone through. That I know so well, and I didn't even have to think about it. And it's the material I'm most comfortable with. And lastly, I want to share with you about this love affair that Pro Buck. I found the material, I had a suspicion that from Pro Buck's writing about this poet, she called China's Shelley. His name is Xu Zhimo. Because she just adored him so much. In the writer, as an author, you kind of know the trick. You know which character the author is most passionate about. But I didn't have the evidence. And to me, accuracy is important. So I studied the biography by one is American biographer who's very, very good, who is the Dean of University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Peter Kahn. And in the book, he also sort of like a verified that Pro Buck once told her girlfriend that she was in love with somebody. And that hinted as Xu Zhimo. And also another biographer, also excellent, who's a British biographer who did the biography of Matisse. And she wrote the biography on Pro Buck. And she gave this information on Pro Buck, said that she always would love to marry somebody like a Xu Zhimo. And from the way Pro Buck write about this, the handsome of this man, and the time that they did together, it was the time when Xu Zhimo tried to introduce the India poet, Tagore, to China. And when they're doing the presentation, Xu Zhimo was dressed in Western suits. He's tall, handsome, and he's been in Oxford, Columbia, New York, and in China, he was a giant literary figure in China. And the Tagore was there, the big bear. He was not that old, but he had the big bear and the real big clothes. And eventually, it was in the research, I found that the two men correspondence, and Tagore was kind of disappointed because he thought that Xu Zhimo stole the show because all the girls was after him afterwards. And afterwards, Pro Buck invited him to her class. And I've been giving lectures in the university, and a lot of people ask me to go to their class. I don't say that easily, yes. I go to class, I think I'm interested. So I think the two have some connection, and I found it fascinating. So I put it in the book, and I'm going to read you a paragraph. This is from Willow's point of view. I had known Pro's loneliness since we were children. She had always searched for her own kind. That didn't mean another Westerner. It meant another soul that experienced and understood both the Eastern and Western worlds. It was in Xu Zhimo that Pro had found what she was looking for. With him, she had not been lonely. If she were the crashing waves, cheerful foam,
Xu Zhimo would be the wrinkled sea sand beneath. Ashes gathered at the bottom of the incense burner. The sun set behind hill, and the moon and the room fell instantly dark. In the future, I would understand the connection between Pearl's accomplishments as a novelist and her love of Xu Zhimo. Over 80 books she would create in her lifetime, she carried on her affair with Xu Zhimo. I will never forget the moment Pearl lit her last stick of incense. She composed a poem in Chinese, bidding goodbye to Xu Zhimo. Wild summer was in your gaze. Earth laughs in flowers. Lust in the chill of the grave. Wind's hand touches. Mind bent with the weight of sorrow. Orchid boat I bought alone. Spring rain blurs the lantern light. Deep green are my parting thoughts of you. I consider myself lucky too. Although Xu Zhimo didn't love me, he trusted me. It made our ordinary friendship extraordinary. There was commitment and devotion between us. Xu Zhimo had asked me to keep the original manuscript of his poetry. His wife had threatened to burn them because in the pages she smelled the scent of another woman. I became the keeper of Xu Zhimo's secrets. I was so faithful that I didn't even share those manuscripts with Pearl. I would like to think that Xu Zhimo loved me in a special way. The most important lesson he taught me was that there was no one singular perspective on things or emotions in the universe, no one way of comprehending truth. To end my presentation, I would like to treat you with a opera, Chinese opera. I never really find that opera, Chinese opera have this beat until I come to America. America is a musical, a land of music beats. So I sing this and you will enjoy the beats. It's weird. I'm going to present to you 45 degree. This is Mademoiselle believes that it's at the woman's best angle. It's a 45 degree. And I was in this. I was a lousy actress, but in the screen test, I was taught to stand this way, 45 degree. By the way, when I was doing the screen test, all I was thinking is, I don't want to go back to the labor camp. That was all that was motivating me. But today I'm here having fun. So this piece is called Celebration.
今日同饮庆功酒壮志未酬誓不休来日方长谢山少干洒热血写春秋。Thank you. Thank you. Okay, questions. Yes.
Thank you so much, Angie. Could you talk a little bit about, obviously, because she was American, she was, I guess, bourgeois. But since her portraits of Pearl Buck's portraits of Chinese peasants were, as you say, so kind of truthful and based on experience, what were the kinds of reasons under the Cultural Revolution that she was dismissed or banned or you know that you had to denounce her? I mean, what was the kind of the line against her that was used by the regime?
Wonderful question. I think the Communist Party had a problem with the individualism that Pearl Buck put in the character Wang Long and Alan. In my country, we were taught that we were bots on the communist running machine. And we are not supposed to have our own thoughts and own wantings, own desire of things. And in Probuck's peasant character, you see they're full of this. When I get married, I'm going to have a son, I'm going to have more land, I'm going to get rich, prosper, I'm going to have happiness. So if her book is translated to China, and the people read this and say, I wanted this, and nobody would be devoting to communism cause anymore. And because, you see, I wanted to be a martyr. I was brainwashed to that point that I can't wait to be sent to Vietnam to tie a grenade on my body and to jump into the American soldiers and just blow them up on myself. And the best part was that my remains would be wrapped in a communist red flag in silk and be shipped to home. And my parents would be sad, be honored, and I would be the hero. Now, if anybody read the Probuck's book, and you don't want to die, and you don't want to give your life. And I remember when I was giving birth to my daughter in the Chicago hospital in 1991, the first thought, the baby came out, first thought came to me was, she doesn't belong to anybody. She doesn't belong to the Communist Party of China. She belongs to herself. What a thrilling thought. So that's the main issue, that she promoted the individualism. Yes.
In the video, you said that Willow was composed of many characters that Pearl knew during her life, and you alluded to some of the research that you had done. What I'm interested in is... Are all the characters that you based her on, is that from an oral history, or do you have letters? Do you have written accounts? Where did the characters come from that you built Willow from?
It's from, you can say oral history, and also it's a lot of from different sources. Actually, to the point that I just say, forget it. I'm not just going to be faithful to this one, because one person is great on this one, the other person is great on the other one, the stories, and then you have, and during the Cultural Revolution, to escape prosecution, everybody is encouraged to lie. And only this person didn't escape, which is Pearl E, because she loved Probuck so much, and she named herself after Pearl, after Pearl left China. So the authority says, now, you can't explain. Why not any other name? Why do you change your name to Pearl? That's the biggest crime. So she suffered really most. And for others, it's just so rich, so many informations. And also, for example, the Dick character, the person who eventually Willow married, it was like I will get myself in trouble. it's my daughter's grandfather. he ran away with Mao and became the high official of the Communist Party. And my daughter's grandmother graduated from the school that you saw, Probuck and the Carrie taught. So it was kind of convenient. I said, I can't believe it. It was almost, within the family. And also the stuff that happened in the prison camp and all this, I knew very well. And the part that really pleased me was that the curator at the Probuck house, and she says, I know you modeled this one after this character, because she's a historian. So I was very pleased that she recognized some of the characters she's been studying. Yes.
I was just curious if you're going to be appearing at either the LA Times Book Festival at the end of this month at UCLA or at the West Hollywood Book Festival in October.
I will be at, Luis, it's called LA.
LA Times Festival Books on Sunday. I'm moderating.
Yeah, she's going to be moderating, and I'm so looking forward to that. 3 o'clock, LA Book Festival paneling. Yes. Okay, next. Yes.
What exactly did you do during the Cultural Revolution?
What?
What exactly did you do during the Cultural Revolution?
Oh, okay. The first day of the Cultural Revolution, I remember waking up in the middle of the night and hearing my neighbor calling, 复旦中学的学生在looting. Middle school Red Guards coming looting her house, and they dragging her out, and she resisting, they beating her up. And I remember my parents come to the room and they're watching over the window. And I asked my parents, I said, why do you do something about it? My parents says, we will do something about it if it won't you little children. Because, you know, we probably will be the next. And because of that, I have to really, I became an adult since year of five. I have to prove myself that I am just as loyal, although my parents are not from slaves, the three generation of porters, they are teachers. And my mother was working at a Shanghai rain boot factory. And I basically don't see my mother in daylight. And one day, she was so happy, she came, I saw my mother in daylight, and she says, my tuberculosis is so bad that it's contagious, and my unit people don't want me, so give me a break. So I get to be with my kids. And she was so happy, bubbling, and but she was wearing black clothes all the time. I said, Mom, why do you wear black clothes? And she says, oh, tomorrow morning, if I don't wake up, I will be in the right clothes. And then I thought was, and so my mother said, well, if that happens, you got to take care of your three siblings. And I often wake up in here with wet pillows because my grandfather died at the age of 55 and my mother's mother died at the age of 49 to tuberculosis. And, you know, but then I was happy, you know, tried to do good and at the school, try to saving the proletarians all over the world and being brainwashed. And it was preparing for America to invade China. And I remember Mao said this beautiful sentence. It says, man of humanity should refuse to preserve his life at the expense of that humanity. You know, the teenagers just embrace him. He is our God. And the Mao says, well, America have advanced the machine guns and all that. Our only tactic is 人海战术, meaning the people war. We have to suck the American in and we do the combat, hand-to-hand combat, and we have the entire nation to combat with them. And I was the leader of the school since the age of 11. I was selected to Shanghai Garrison to practice combat, and I would have this, dummy in front of me with the U.S. soldier's head on it, and I'm giving a piece of a wood stick, and later on gun with a bayonet, and for 3 hours a day, sometimes even six, just practice, and we were told that we're going to be dealing with the U.S. Marine. So the first action was toko da, yibei yong, chang! And then poke. So I go, sha! Sha! Like this. And until it's a second nature, you see a high nose and blonde hair person, and you just know it's anime, you just go, sha! And this is a deal with one person. And then when advanced class, I was taught to deal with three Marines. So one come up from here, I go, I'm doing the slow motion. Sha. And then the second one comes this direction. I use the back of my gun just to knock him off this way. And then another person from the back
and go sha. So practice move, to sha, sha, just until I couldn't do a good job. And the instructor says, Anqi, you have to imagine, you have to really imagine, this is not dummy, it's a real tall, strong American soldier. If you don't do that to him, he's going to do it to you, and you are 12 years old. So you got to go, sha, and then twist, make sure you see the blood coming up. And then during the day, we were watching the movies, like where a girl, I remember, that was so terrifying in a way, the Vietnamese girl my age, her eyes got scooped out because she was an informer. Now think about it, it's a montage. Because I never saw the actual action of scooping the eyes. It was like a tighter a cloth over. But for a kid, it was so strong to make us just to hate American, whatever they did in Vietnam. So then comes to the episode, I want to be a martyr, try to die there and all that. Now, twist of fate. Today, I'm happily married to a former U.S. Marine Vietnam vet and English teacher. And during our wedding night, he says, I hope I don't have flashbacks. I said, I hope I don't have flashbacks. You know these Marines? Get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, patrol the garden. Somebody is in the yard. I said, how do you know? And he says, well, the crickets, it's not singing. Somebody in the yard. Anyway, I think it's 8 o'clock. Should I? Okay, he has a question.
I had a friend who was the nephew of Helen Foster Snow, who with her husband Edgar Snow traveled to China at about the same time Pearl Buck was writing, I believe, in the 30s, and wrote Red Star Over China, was her most famous book, I think.
Yes.
That was fairly pro-communist, given the corruption of the nationalist government. Mm-hmm. So I wondered if you had any insights or any thoughts about her, either potentially as a subject for a book or just in general in terms of your perception of her in Chinese history, her and her husband.
Well, Edgar Snow and they are considered China's number one friends. They are Mao's friends. And they've been taught in the Chinese textbooks. So that's what I learned, that they are Chinese friends, actually versus Prolet's book. And the only thing is that the Mao's, they wish that they could be as popular and was given Nobel Prize as Pearl Buck. And that's why Madame Mao is so disappointed that they can't convert Pearl Buck to support the communism. Pearl Buck predicted that the Mao would rule China because he was respecting the peasants and he knows what they want and how to work with them. But Pearl Buck did not support communism. And she kind of foreseeing the result of the communist ruling, which was the Cultural Revolution. And it absolutely amazes me that she wrote a book called Three Daughters of Mrs. Liang, describing the chaos of Cultural Revolution. And it's a time she didn't live. And everything she described, especially the senselessness of it, it was so accurate. And I have such a respect for Pearl as a writer. And what broke my heart was when I heard her daughter's story. When was the detail about after she was rejected a visa, she was so heartbroken, and this is her daughter's words. She said, my mother tried every connection she had in the world, tried to pursue the Chinese government and to plea to have the visa to allow her to go back home and to have to spend the time with where her father was buried, her mother was buried, and she just wanted to be there before she died. But she was
giving no mercy. And the second was the detail that days before she Prabhupada died, she was wearing this Chinese floral Chinese dress, standing in front of her China window in Pennsylvania, Bucktown. And then outside the window, and her daughter showed me, Prabhupada created this Chinese scene, very much like a Zhenjiang, with the pond, the ducks, and the maple tree. And she, I believe, China was on her thoughts when she passed away. And it just make me feel so good that I'm given an opportunity on the 18th of this month to do a presentation at the Prabhupada's house. And I just can't wait. I'm taking my daughter, which you saw. She's the person who played the willow in the movie. And the two of us are going to do the peasant opera because we feel that she was heartbroken because she was rejected the visa by Madame Mao, but we are here to honor it and to bring the sound of her childhood and bring her the love of Chinese people. Thank you. Thank you.
Aloud Audio is produced by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Annenberg Foundation, Righteous Persons Foundation, Errant Fox, City National Bank, Deloitte, K&L Gates, KPMG, Wallace Foundation, the Bujakchi Foundation, Dean Hansel, and Donna and Martin J. Wolf. Media support provided by KPCC 83.9 FM, KUSC 91.5 FM, and KCET. A Loud theme composed by Larry Karish.